Good afternoon. You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio, a 60-minute live program about the thriving visual and literary arts community in Kansas City. Filling in for Maria Vasquez Boyd, who's on assignment in Sedona, I'm Blair Schulman, art writer, critic, and senior editor of InformalityBlog.com. And today, we are going to be talking about the Charlotte Street Foundation Studio Residency. Charlotte Street Foundation is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year, established in 1997 by advocate David Hughes as a response to needs voiced by the Kansas City artist who wanted an organization that met creative, social, and economic resources for artists living in the area. And for the past two decades, it has grown as a major art supporter. Part of that programming includes the Studio Residency Program. They provide free studio and rehearsal spaces to exceptional young emerging and or accomplished artists in need of workspace to create and develop their creative processes. And today joining us are a couple of the incoming residents, one veteran resident, and Pat Alexander, who is the Charlotte Street Program Manager. Pat, welcome to ArtSpeak Radio.
Thank you, Blair.
Tell us a little bit about the program and what it does.
Well, the program started 14 years ago under the Urban Culture Project, which basically was in downtown Kansas City, definitely a different landscape than it is today. There were lots of vacant office spaces, and we built a relationship with those business owners to basically set up temporary art galleries and studio spaces for these artists. So we built this sort of trust between the management companies and the artists to basically explore and take their careers to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, in 14 years now, we serve 32 artists this coming term. We're in one building at Copagan Brooks Town Pavilion down mm-hmm. on 12th and Walnut.
Do you know how many artists in residence you've had over the last 14 years?
Oh, man.
Sorry.
I didn't mean
a trick question.
I would say easily 200 plus.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, also in the studio with us are a couple of the incoming artists, including Lanisha Johnson, who is a painter and creates familiar domestic black spaces of color through the language of collage and drawing. Lanisha, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're working on and what may or may not change during your residency?
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I'm really excited about the Charlotte Street Residency Program. Stepping out of studio and just graduating from the Kansas City Art Institute, I've been really thinking about how to transform my work into a three-dimensional language.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to use the studio space to make a lot of large-scale work and thinking about a lot of three-dimensional materials to implement in that work as well. I create mostly domestic spaces, so I'm really thinking about how the viewer can step into these spaces and interact with them.
Mm-hmm. You know, because your work is so much about domestic spaces, now you're in a communal space. Do you think this might translate to your work somehow or not?
I do think it could translate into my work more so in the conversations that I can have with my peers and the other artists in the program about the work that I'm creating. More so in the past, I've been making work specifically talking about these domestic spaces in a cultural sense,
mm-hmm.
specifically talking about black culture. But now I'm really thinking about stepping out of that overwhelming content and
sure.
really trying to open up and talk about different spaces and not just black cultural spaces.
Sure. And I think that's the whole point of the residencies, Pat, wouldn't you say? It's a place to time to explore.
Absolutely. Coming out like someone like her, getting out of school, out of the studio, getting away from the teachers, academia, and then just really having that time to just work
mm-hmm.
and explore. Yeah, you see amazing things come out of that in 1 year, and that I don't think they even know. So we have them actually fill out a goal and strategy sort of worksheet before they get into the actual studios.
Mm-hmm.
That helps as we find them mentors and things like that to help kind of guide them and figure out what it is they want to do.
Sure. Also joining us is Matthew Johnson. He is an audio producer and visual artist and works in a variety of mediums, exploring epistemology and its many analogs. Matthew, welcome. So working in sound as an audio producer, are these disciplines, and also as a visual artist, are these disciplines you work on separately, or do they meet at some point?
I think I've mostly worked on them separately, but I think the goal of the studio is to bring them together and really, like, kind of suss out what the similarities are. And I think, I mean, the way that I've worked with my objects, or, like, my found object sculpture, is a very similar way that I've worked with sound, which, like, kind of create clips or, you know, sound bites and kind of treat them in as just composing mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to establish a connection between those two things a little bit more. That'll be a little bit more apparent.
And I'll ask a similar question that I asked Lanisha. Do you think your audio work might address the physical environment? Because it seems to be really rich with possibility, being surrounded by all these new people.
I think I really want to combine, like, my sculpture with my sound work. Like, I want the sound work to be in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also working to do more performances and actually kind of physically kind of put the sound and put my work, you know, in front of people where I can actually react and respond to others. So it's not just like, you know, I'm putting on a track and people are enjoying it. I want to actually have a conversation.
So you want people to have an experience with the work. But I'm glad you talked about that, putting your work in front of people in a performative space, because, Pat, there are performance spaces there.
There's a black box sort of theater room and a dance room. And so they do have opportunities that they can bring the public up. Also, we bring in different curators and people to do visits with them to give them feedback. And then we do our annual open studios in April, where all the artists are showcasing their work and the public is invited to come up and experience. It's kind of like a crazy little Friday night carnival.
I've been to those carnivals. They're a lot of fun. Actually, it's really kind of crazy because there is so much going on at once. And I noticed that almost all the residents participate in this. So it's kind of like, I hate to use First Friday as a reference, but it is kind of this very, very super condensed environment of work and discipline. And it's like a First Friday all in one space.
It's a really special night for all of them to, like, thrive and shine and invite their peers and also network. And there's a lot of collaborations by that point that come into it.
Mm-hmm.
So someone like Matthew might end up connecting with a composer who's a doctorate, you know, and who's doing electronic things as well, or is doing totally acoustic things. And, like, you get to see this all flourish at these events like that. And then maybe the dancers are involved too, because you have writers, dancers, composers. I mean, it's really a wide variety
Sure.
of disciplines in there.
So does the residency encourage collaborations between each other?
We do encourage it in the call, but we don't force it.
Sure.
The way I've treated it always is like, I'm going to put you in here. I'll plant the seeds, let you guys, you know, you're in there.
Mm-hmm.
We know that you're focused on your life, your work, your studio work, but there are opportunities. And I think, I mean, that's a Charlotte Street mission in general, not just in the residency.
It always has been. And I think it's always been just putting people in front of one another and letting it remain organic and see what happens.
That's the whole organization's, you know, it's kind of it is a sort of scrappy grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
Foundation. Like,
I know, but do you still think it's so scrappy? I think it's very organized.
Yeah,
really put
it's
together.
Way more organized.
I mean, but
it's
also,
sexy, but there's only five of us doing
sure.
all these things.
but somehow the synergy is so amazing that you manage to put all these people together with all these eclectic backgrounds and disciplines, and a lot of magic happens.
That's one thing I believe. It's trusting the artist, and,
mm-hmm.
and with everything that we do, with all the programming, when you trust them, you know that cool things are going to happen. There might be some cussing and cursing that happens along the way and banging your head on the wall, but you trust them, and in the end, when it's showtime, they always shine. It's like, that's a special thing about Kansas City and the artists that are here.
Right. So these are new experiences for Lanisha and Matthew, but also joining us is the artist known as Boy Boy, who's entering their second year of the studio residency. Boy Boy was recently awarded a Rocket Grant to support Alter, a collaborative, multidisciplinary artist-run space in connecting creative disciplines through interactive environments and unexpected programming. So Boy Boy, as a veteran of the group, tell us what you've learned and are still learning in your existing space.
I feel like having the studio space right out of school is really, really beneficial,
mm-hmm.
Which is what happened to me, because it gives you, you're still kind of on that energy from school, and you can kind of keep playing it,
mm-hmm.
but learning how to use that same energy based off of your own like time management and everything else that you're dealing with, and kind of providing you that like transitional period.
Sure.
That provides you with like different opportunities than you otherwise would have.
Sure. Well, this is an entirely new environment, or is it a continuation of your studio practice from school? How do you feel about that after being there for a year?
I mean, it's a mix. It's changed in scale, and like it's also changed in like the intent, where it's like going from school where you're doing it based off of a like assignment or deadline,
sure,
or something like that. There's more time to play, but then it's you have to learn to set up your own deadlines. Mm-hmm. And having a program where there's some pre-existing ones, or it's like, or you have the opportunity to start working with people that can give you those deadlines, if you're like me that like loves a good deadline.
Sure. Well, it's great. I know what you mean. It's great because you have this goal in sight, and you know that you have to reach it or else. And I just want to say to our listeners that I have collaborated in the past with Boy Boy and Matthew Johnson. We put on a show together at Front Space, which worked out really great. It was a terrific show, but it did show how much discipline plays a part in creating your work together. But Boy, I want to ask also, when all the things that you thought you needed to do when you came into the space, and now that you've been there for a while, does that all go out the window, and do you have to readapt?
For me personally, yes. I think that like having it for a second year is like that time to kind of rethink what worked well, what didn't work well, and kind of readdress, mm-hmm. being like, I still need to focus on time management, or like I want to get back into like focusing on this idea, or going back to basics in a sense, where it's like,
right.
Breaking things down in new ways. So I think having a second year is a good opportunity to reevaluate everything you have done.
Sure. Pat, how do you keep track of the residents during their time at the studios?
I've got lots of cameras all over. They don't know.
I know there's tripwires, so that you know how long they're spending there.
Well, here's one thing. So it is in a unique space, the studios. It's in Tombeville, which was AT&T's old headquarters that mm-hmm. we've basically taken over and added and grown organically in there, built walls and pulled the carpet.
But it still looks like an office, which is kind of great, which is what you really want an office to be like.
But having a corner office studio that looks over mm-hmm. all of the landscape downtown is pretty amazing for a young artist.
The views are pretty spectacular.
It's pretty amazing. It's highly secured. anyways, but the ways that I keep track, one thing, they have 24/7 access, which is also mm-hmm. a really cool thing about this program. So I'm not down there 24/7, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I'm checking in basically, you know, through emails, through text, Facebook groups. We have a monthly meetings every third Monday that we all meet together that they're required to come to. We're bringing guest speakers. We just laundry list what's happening. Mm-hmm. So we try to build some sense of community down there as well.
Sure. Lanisha, have you been in your space yet?
No, I haven't been in our space. We get in our spaces September 17th.
So there's a lot of anticipation. So I also wanted to ask about that process too, Pat.
Yeah.
Do you speak to the residents about what kind of space they need or
Absolutely.
Desire?
So it's kind of a long pre-process. So the call goes out in March. Decisions are made by jurors. It's not by Charlotte Street. And they get that's in May. They get notified in June. Then I set up an individual meeting with each one of them in July. And mm-hmm. we talk about what they really need, because they do put in an application, but we review. Things change in that matter of that time, of like especially they just graduated and things like that. And then with that I have to then sit and go through, okay, let's plan this reality TV show for the next year and figure out who should be next to who and what do they need. This one needs a dark space. This one needs more walls and windows. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of planning, and then there's a lot of anticipation for them as well. And I think in with the community, because we don't make the announcement right away. So there's people like wondering, did I get it? Did I not get it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy, because there's like 125 applications
sure.
that came in.
Yeah. So what about Matthew, someone like yourself who works in audio? What kind of space do you think you need? But you've all toured the spaces. You know what it looks like. And you've also been to past open studios. So what kind of space do you think you would probably work best in.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of cool with a lot of different spaces. But I mean, because I do a lot of installation work and I do a lot of sculpture and painting, I mean, I think having kind of an open, kind of normal studio space is great because I can always set my computer up. I can have it in the corner. Mm-hmm. I can kind of, you know, maybe schedule around other performers and kind of work in sound spaces when I need to. But mm-hmm. it doesn't need to be like a central part of my studio.
Sure.
There's also, I mean, some of the artists, I've seen them have two or three studios. So, like, they adapt to what that space they have down there. So maybe I'm going to do this kind of work here, but I'm going to do my computer work at home, and then I'm going to bring this thing in over here.
Mm-hmm. Are there things that you encourage the artists to bring or not to bring? I've noticed that when I've gone to open studios or just gone on studio visits with some of the artists, it looks like people have moved in. It's kind of crazy. I know I've been to Boy Boy Space, and it's like there's a lounge pit, because I know it's Boy Boy's workspace, but there's like I could just sit myself down and just hang out on top of all this fabric. So it does look like people have really set down roots there.
There, yeah. I mean, they are not allowed to live there.
Okay. We're just making this
sometimes
official.
Sometimes people take naps at weird hours.
But naps are encouraged for artists.
Absolutely. Now, what I encourage is I want you to be in there working. Like, and what are the challenges for artists? Basically, it is that they have the struggle of work and life, and so we need to let them also get in there and do their work. So we do you know, we have a little lounge area. I've mm-hmm. set up a library in there of just my own books and ones people donated so people can, you know, I encourage them, like, if you're not working, like picking up the paintbrush, but you're just present, that's huge too. And that, like, that helps other conversations, or you might get a, you know, critique or something like that from mm-hmm. one of the other residents as well.
Sure. You know, just joining us right now, we have another resident, Jessica Ayala, who is one of the writers. I'm glad you came because I didn't want to be the only writer in the room here. And I'm sorry that we started without you. But I did want to ask you, Jessica, tell us about tell us about the writing projects that you intend to tackle during this residency.
Well, hello, everyone. Yeah. I'm so excited to join everybody.
Well, glad you're here.
No worries at all. So I have some major projects in the works. My first book just launched about a week and a half ago. I have my second book.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us the titles. Where we can find it.
The first book is called Huelga.
Okay.
And you can find it at Prospero's bookstore, but we're also going to have that available online. It's been an incredible experience. And then I'm hoping by April we can get the second book published.
Very nice.
And that one will be called Just a Kid from Ipiales.
Outstanding. So now you're coming into the residency this month, and what do you think you're going to be doing while you're there besides thinking about your next book? Well, there's a lot that you can do.
Well, one thing I'm excited about is the fact that I no longer have to be quiet about my drum sessions, because I have this huge Native American, South American drum that I have to be real quiet uh-huh. with when I practice. So I'm excited to have the space and the time to be able to bring some of the drumming, the tribal drumming that I want to do, and incorporate it with my writing. So that's that's like one little project that I have.
So now your writing is for publishing, but do you also do spoken word, or rather live performances of your writing?
Yes.
So you are preparing to do things like that during the residency?
Without a doubt. I just booked the Mutual Musicians Foundation for a Latin jazz poetry night.
Ooh.
I'm thrilled about it, but I want to do things like that as well, you know, mm-hmm. through the residency program.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a station ID break, and then we'll come back and talk to all our guests.
Kansas City area, and today the topic is an adaptation of a popular memoir, and it's called The Glass Castle.
This is the story that Jeanette Walls wrote about her life growing up in a very dysfunctional family. I read the book and found the book totally a page put it down, and so I really wanted to see this film. It stars Brie Larson and Woody Harrelson. There are riveting scenes in the film. Great portrayal of a child raised in chaos who goes from child wonderment to disillusionment.
Brie Larson is very good in this role, and Equally good are the two children who play her in her younger years.
Absolutely.
The movie will work or not work depending on your reaction to Woody Harrelson's character and also Naomi Watts as the mother. For some reason, I never bought her. I thought she was phony, and it was an actory performance in my mind.
She was the weakest of them all. I mean, there were no weak actors except her. But it's a compelling story. I think it's as great as the book. Woody Harrelson's character, he plays the father, and his tenderness and his craziness comes through. But the place where it fails for me is the ending. It didn't match the book, and it was too Hollywoodish, everything wrapped up like a Christmas present.
The filmmakers take a very sincere approach to the material. However, I never quite believed it. I always thought that somehow it lacked credibility.
Really?
And even though it is based on a true story, and it's good that we know that because otherwise I never would have bought it.
Uh-huh.
But I do think that I would have to chalk it up as a near miss.
I've witnessed some of this. I just think it was authentic.
I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
Friday, September 8th at 7 p.m., Crossroads Music Fest Showcase at Vinyl Renaissance, brought to you by Aubrey Vineyards, featuring Brad Cunningham, Instant Karma, and My Oh My. When we go to work every day. All of these artists will be performing at Crossroads Music Fest on Saturday the 9th. But this is a free show and your last chance to get advanced pricing for the festival. Friday, September 8th at 7 p.m. at Vinyl Renaissance in Old Downtown Overland Park. Thanks again to Aubrey Vineyards for supporting KKFI and the Art of Making Music. All info at cmfkc.com/showcase.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
Hi, I'm Brad Cox of the People's Liberation Big Band of Greater Kansas City. Thanks for listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back from our social media break. Everybody's on their phones tweeting and Insta and Facebooking and all that. It's nice that we have this time in the middle of the day to talk about our work. I think before the break, I was asking everybody if we all have day jobs that support our art life. So, Glunisha, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, how your studio work is going to coordinate with your paycheck life, which we all have.
Well, thankfully for most of my work, I create my own materials. I use a lot of collage materials that I do my own hand-painted textures and different patterns on. So as far as cost, my studio process isn't super expensive,
right.
But what I am having to deal with is just trying to maintain my schedule between working. I have dedicated myself to stay with a part-time job just because I want the Charlotte Street residency to be my first priority.
So this is going to be pretty much, studio is going to be a big part of your day.
Right.
Or night, however it works out. That's great. I don't think everybody has that luxury. I think that's part of why the program is so successful and sought after, is that people need to have the time and the space to work on their work. So Matthew, working on your audio equipment, tell us how that's going to fit into your work schedule also. I'm curious to know how that's going to coordinate.
Yeah, I currently work at the Nelson Atkins, and I as a maintenance worker, and I really only have like 2 days, so the rest of my time I'm like planning about 40 hours a week that I want to be in studio, and so I'm already kind of set up a couple like schedules, like mental schedules of like, all right,
sure.
For about a couple hours every day I'm going to work on like composing and trying to figure out, like, creating. I want to devote about 30 minutes, maybe 45, to just, like, messing around with my Moog synthesizer and trying to find some new weird textures. And
are you normally this organized in your studio practice before this? Is that how you've always worked?
I've been pretty organized, but, like, when things get, like, really crazy and, like, right down to deadlines, I mean, I will fill my studio with materials and whatnot, and just, like, they get kind of overwhelming. And so, like, I just kind of work on things when I can at that point.
Got it. But now you have an opportunity to kind of set a schedule and stick to it pretty much if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, boy, I wanted to ask you, now that you've been doing this for a while, how has your schedule morphed or adapted? Well,
when I first got the residency, I switched jobs. So I work at the Alamo, which is a block away from the studio.
How convenient.
Which I did on purpose so that if I have to go down to work already, I'm like, you're a block away from studio. You can go spend at least an hour in there, do something, be semi-productive, or going after work.
Sure. How often do you find yourself going to studio?
Oh, gosh. It really depends on, like, week to week, but also, like, because most of what I do is installation based, and that's often site specific. So I do a lot of preliminary work in my studio, but then if I have an event or some sort of installation coming up, I'm not in studio that much, surprisingly. Or I'm just, like, picking up stuff. I've made friends with the freight elevator worker a lot.
Is it more a time of preparation and consideration as opposed to actually making, or are you making a lot in your studio?
It's more like preparation. It's like having that kind of quiet space that, like, isn't your home, because you, like, when you go home, you're, like, set for a domestic space and you want to relax. Like, having a space that's like neutral, that you can just, like, think and, like, be productive in, and, like, I think that's super important. Even if I'm not, like, actively building something, I'm, like, sketching ideas or preparing or gathering materials.
What I love about seeing Boy Boy's studio is you would see these elements later on in these installations offsite. So it was really cool to see, like, okay, where is this macrame kind of, I don't know, rug thing going to go next? And, like, oh, and it's going to get with this infinity mirror with this thing. So you can see how the process is working, like, which is pretty cool to see that part.
And, Pat, as part of the application process, what are some of the things that you were looking for or you had hoped to see in that process?
I'm not looking for anything, because I'm not the one. I'm just administrating it. So the jurors are the ones who are looking at them. So we pick out the jurors hoping that they're going to find the things that we're looking for. But we want definitely multidisciplinary is a huge thing. Artists who are taking risk, exploring. You know, we're attracting artists also who are moving to Kansas City for this residency, which is amazing then, because that's, like, builds this broader network for the local artist as well, and opportunities for other shows for them. But I think the main thing looking for is this: are they dedicated to their studio practice? Are they going to come in there and they're going to work and they're just going to create? And then that, I mean, I think that is a soul thing, definitely.
Having a studio practice, is it a new thing, or does it seem to be, based on your experience, a continuation of those who already have studio practices?
It's completely mixed. So we have artists from the age of 22 to 65, maybe. So you've had some older ones who they're just going for it, and they're trying, so they're nervous, and they're, you know, like, are we going to – am I doing it right? Am I meeting an artist right?
Sure.
You know, kind of thing. And then you have, there's some, like, who are also, like, dedicated to one project. So, like, they're collaborating and like, we're moving here to Kansas City. We're going to work on this project. We're going to rehearse this day and this day. We're shooting a video, and we're going to showcase it at the end of the residency. And their heads are down, and they're just constantly working.
I also wanted to ask you that, is it required that each artist in residence have a mentor to guide them through the program?
Yeah, we added the mentorship program, which is basically volunteers from the arts community that we talk with the artists to find out in that year what they're trying to focus on and do, who's that art buddy going to be that's going to help them, that maybe they meet three times throughout the term at critical points. So, like, it's a studio visit, or they have a big exhibition coming up, things like that, or they're trying to break out into touring or getting into teaching at the Art Institute, things like that. So it's not required, but it's definitely a benefit to this program. It's sure. not just about free studio space. It's about all, there's so many other layers to this as well.
There are a lot of components to this, and I think probably the biggest takeaway is that it provides a lot of camaraderie between artists within the community. I think we often see one another at openings, or we're friends with one or the other, but this brings it into a different environment that allows people to, gives them permission to start thinking differently, meeting people you normally don't meet. I think we're a pretty eclectic group right here. We might see one another at openings, or we might have gone to school together, but now there's an opportunity to take these relationships and go to a different place with it.
Yeah, just slowing down and pause for a minute. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all active. We all have – we do this, and this, mm-hmm. you know, kind of things. So I do feel like when you get that time to have a coffee and just, like, really talk about yeah. your art is healthy.
Well, Jessica, I know as a writer – I'm a writer also, and I tend to work alone, and I kind of hunker down and just do my thing on my own. But what about yourself? How's your process like that? Do you like to – you're in this environment where you're – possibly surrounded by lots of people, and how's that going to work with your writing process?
I thrive actually off of other people's energy.
Okay.
It's always benefited me. Mm-hmm. So just the idea that other people are working, and if I'm in the uh-huh. same space, maybe like pacing back and forth mm-hmm. in the hallways, I can just picture myself doing that now and just seeing other people in their process. I have to be moving, but I'm excited because my plan is to go to the studio, go hard, and then like go to the Mutual Musicians Foundation at like 2 a.m. and just keep writing and possibly go back.
Sure, which is about the time the MMA, Mutual Musicians Foundation, gets going.
That's true.
Also, Glenisha, did you have what was your studio practice like before this, or what is it now?
Right now, I've been working on a lot of oil paintings. I'm just using my back room in my apartment to do a lot of spaces that remind me of back home. I'm born and raised from Dallas, Texas, mm-hmm. and just graduating, I feel like I haven't felt as lonely as I have until now.
Sure.
So I find myself making a lot of work that reminds me of like the culture and environment back home. But my studio space, as I said, like I make these papers that I use mm-hmm. mostly for collage, and the collage process translates through the collages, drawings, and paintings that I do. So I keep like 20 different paper bags that are labeled by color in each of my like hand painted created papers. Also sometimes using found and bought papers to talk about a commercialized culture that I feel like can translate into colonization mm-hmm. with black culture. So it's just like paper bags everywhere and paintings and drawings up on the walls.
So when you get into your space, you just kind of fill it up and just get down and just do everything.
Right. I like to work on a lot of pieces simultaneously just because most of my processes in the paintings, drawings, and collages are really meticulous. And sometimes I can get tired of doing the same piece over and over. So I like to have a lot of different work up
sure.
at once.
I make a lot of studio visits, and I love to go into other people's spaces and see what they work on, don't work on. And it's always amazing to me that you can have work in various stages. And I know that you get tired of it. I get tired of a writing project and I want to do something else, but I often will just watch a lot of YouTube videos instead. But it's amazing to see artists, visual artists, working on all these multiple projects and the ability to jump in and go right back to where you left off, which is kind of remarkable. But Matthew, I wanted to ask you, with sound, how does that work for you? Do you work on one project or do you work on several simultaneously? How's that going?
I usually work on a lot at once. Like mm-hmm. I can't just focus on one project at a time. Cause it's with my sound work, especially like I have to have, I kind of have to take breaks from it because it can be really, really, monotonous and, just a little bit too, like, too intense. You're listening to one clip like 50 times over mm-hmm. an hour. So I tend to like shift my focus a lot. And kind of happens with my visual work as well. Like I try to kind of balance like when I'm working on those things because the shift is refreshing and
sure.
allows me to kind of keep going.
Sure. And boy, I also wanted to tell our listeners, what are you, when you're not working on Alter, Are you working on other things as well? You seem to start a big project, but do you also work on smaller side projects or things you've just been thinking about?
I have a lot of like little things that I start, and they're kind of like little red herrings of like, I need to physically be doing something, and it's a way to like think about like mm-hmm. a larger project, but I can keep my hands occupied. Mm-hmm. Also, like majority of like what my installations or my studio practice is like building objects that then create like a giant altar, creating a giant space. Mm-hmm. So it's like building those elements that go within it. So it's a long process to get to one installation that's completely new, and then like building up a like repertoire of like objects and stuff like that.
Wow. So Pat, I believe next week the incoming residents have something planned that's going to introduce themselves to everyone else. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, we decided to, as a part of the orientation for these 32 artists to get to know each other, we made it a public orientation. So you might know Pachaka Chavez. From Artist Inc. Yeah, it's broader than that. But yeah, they do that in there. But we invented the slide slam, so it's even faster. So it's like kind of a presentation on crack. It's like they get 10 slides and they have 3 minutes. So basically they have these 10 slides that they're providing me. I kind of curate them all together, so they don't know who's going to go when until the night that they get there. And they change like every 18 seconds, I think it is. So this is a way for them, as like a kind of elevator speech calling card, mm-hmm. not just talk about all the great things they have done, but what are all the great things they want to do in this residency? What are their influences? So it's super fast paced. It's a lot of fun. It's open to the public. It's going to be down at the Office Port down in the Crossroads this year.
So is this open to the public?
This is open to the public on Wednesday, September 13th at 7 p.m. The Office Board was gracious enough to let us use their space for the night. Mm-hmm. So we're super excited to collaborate with them as well. It's open to the public, but you'll see some people nervous. You'll see some that are just going to shine. And it's hilarious. But it builds this whole thing. And then on the following, that Sunday, they actually all meet together and we do a 4-hour orientation, and that's when they actually get their studios. But my feeling is that this way they can kind of pick like, oh, I like that person. Oh, that's a pretty cool thing. We should get to know each other.
Right,
sort of
right.
Thing.
Well, that's – and I think that's – again, it's the whole point of the residencies in toto, that it allows everybody to meet people that might not have the opportunity to otherwise meet. Matthew, do you with working in your audio work and your visual work, what are you anticipating might happen in your space during the course of the residency?
I'm hoping that it will really drastically shift from what it's been. I'm really excited for those two to really like just mesh and get really weird.
Good. Weird is good, I think.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that it's kind of unexpected. Like, it's mm-hmm. something to me that I, at the moment, like, hey, I can do all the planning I want to, but until I get into the space and really start reacting to what mm-hmm. I'm doing, like, I want it to be organic. I want it to come out,
sure.
you know, of a place what I'm thinking.
Have you thought about, in the back of your head, I want to do some really crazy ideas? Do you think this might be the time to do it, or do you think that you're already beginning to plan what you've already started? Or
I think
like
I have
that.
A lot of ideas that are kind of crazy, at least for me. I have a lot of interests in going kind of more of a musical or rhythmic route, and so I want to teach myself like composition in that way, and for me that feels crazy. It's not all that like out of the box, but like
sure but it is. I think it's a great time to really screw around and fail and have
really
fun.
I just want to do house music for a while.
One thing that's also cool, I think, for all of these residents is that we developed a blog that they are all authors of, and so it's a WordPress blog, so that they can be sharing like what's going on. So it doesn't have to be like just spam of like, hey, here's a show I'm having, but it's like, here's what I'm working on right now. So it's a way for the outside to come up and see what's going on in this crazy space throughout mm-hmm. the year.
What has been some of the, during the open studios, and that's once a year or twice a year?
Once a year.
And what have you noticed is the takeaway from the visitors to the space? What do they know what's going on?
I think there's some it's surprised. They're like, how does this even exist, that this is going on in this 36-story building that there's this one floor of freaks. It's
just, that space is as corporate as it gets. It's kind of crazy.
It's super corporate. So there's the amazement, but I think there's also then like the talent that like that is just so intense that it's all on display there. And you see how professional they are and dedicated to their work. So there's that. And this is the diversity of work. I mean, so you've got, you know, one room, there's a playwright doing some sort of new, sort of campy thing. And then you got another guy who's doing the gamelan orchestra. And then there's a free jazz thing going on here. I mean, it's just so crazy.
Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. I know that everybody, all the residents have their assigned spaces. But like someone like Matt, who works in audio, or Jessica, who plays her drum, are they allowed to use other parts of the environment?
There is breakout spaces, okay. Not a ton, but so they all each kind of have a dedicated space. The performers have like one room that they share like on a schedule, so it's like I practice on this day and that day. So then if there's nobody in those rooms, then the visual artists could go and break out into the area as well. And then just little areas for like installation stuff, and there's a little – another section like for like a wood shop, but it's not a formal wood shop.
But, sure. You know. But you encourage everybody to kind of stay put in these spaces.
Be respectful to your neighbors. It's a golden rule, I think, in everywhere you're at. And don't push it, but always ask. Don't assume.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Glenisha, what is the one thing that you're most excited about for starting this residency?
The one thing I'm most excited about is meeting everyone else, transitioning out of being in studio at school. I'm really excited to be around artists who are making work for a grade and like really care about what they're making and wants to find the nuance in their own processes and being able to expand that as much as they can.
Sure. And Jessica, I want to ask you the same question. What do you think is going to be the biggest change when you start this residency, or what are you looking forward to the most?
For me, it's just adopting more extraordinary artists into my circle, you know, because we all speak the same language. And
we do, and it's all this different patois. We all speak the same thing, but we say it so differently, which is kind of exciting.
And just the inspiration. I mean, just being able to just like vibe off of other people's creativity and just the stories that I'm going to learn and the people I'm going to meet. I'm just going to totally be present.
Awesome.
And take it all in.
Awesome. Matthew, what about yourself? Tell me what you're looking forward to the most.
That's actually kind of the same thing for me. I'm really excited for the possibility of collaboration and just meeting other people with different perspectives and ways of thinking about art. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that I've really enjoyed the Kansas City art like community is that like there's just so much that people are. Sorry, I'm like having a brain fart. There's just a lot of different perspectives that people are.
Sure.
Putting out there right now. I want to get to know more of it because I think there's a bit of a I don't know. There's a bit of a
There's this kind of I think in the macro it seems like everybody's kind of working on sort of the same thing, and then when you get down to the nitty gritty, when you go into these spaces, you start to see how very, very different everybody's thinking and practice and disciplines really are. And I think that's one of the great joys of the studio residencies in the Kansas City art community in general.
Yeah. Also, if you want to learn more about like how the application, which is in the spring and about the Slide Slam, you can go to charlottestreet.org. And Charlotte Street is spelled out. And in there you can find about our other residencies as well. And I do feel like there's opportunities for all sorts of different artists, even if you're not in this program, just to check that out.
Sure. Well, we will see all of you incoming residents. And boy, I'll just see you later. I just want to thank everybody for joining us. I'm really looking forward to this incoming group of residents for Charlotte Street. And now I'm going to pass things back to Mark Manning.
We just want to thank you, Blair. Good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, I'm squatting this seat. Maria doesn't get to have it anymore.
Yeah.
Blair Schulman's been filling
thanks,
in.
Thanks, 90.1 for all that you do. It's amazing. And this show's great.
Thank you to all the guests, Patrick Alexander, Glenisha Johnson, Matthew Johnson, Boy Boy, and Jessica Ayal. Thank you all. And Blair, when are you going to come back?
The next time Maria goes on vacation. I don't know. I don't know. When I have something new and exciting to talk about like this, or maybe I'll just come back and hang out with Maria and talk because it's I miss doing this. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you. You've been listening so far. This is Art Speak Radio here at 90.1 FM, KKFI. We're going to take a little music break and then invite in Diana Lynn, who's going to talk about the Crossroads Music Festival. Please stay tuned. All right. Listening to a little bit of Mysterious Clouds here from their release in Panic on Noon Meridian here on ArtSpeak Radio. My name is Mark Manning, and we have with us 90.1 FM KKFI Development Director Bill Sundahl, who is the founder of the Crossroads Music Fest, which is happening this Saturday, September 9th.
That's right,
Bill?
That's correct.
Tell us what's going on.
Well, we're putting on a music festival as a fundraiser for KKFI and as a way to raise awareness about some great artists right here in our community and from around the country. We've got some folks coming in from Chicago. We've got some folks coming in from Tulsa. But it's mostly, you know, Casey Lawrence-based, you know, the surrounding area. I think there's one from Holden, you know. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we've got day parties going on during the day. We've got Mixed Masters Music Conference. We've got pop-up shops at Josie Records. We've got and then a music festival from 6 till 2 in the morning, and it's an entire day of celebrating music and art and bringing people together. That's what we do here. We build community at KKFI.
You've put together nearly 60 bands this year, all kinds of music. It's a very diverse music festival. There's a little something for everybody. There's hip-hop, soul, R&B, rock, pop, power punk, right. Country, Americana, jazz, ska. There's a little something for everybody in this mix.
Which, I mean, that's sort of the point, is to curate a show that is so you don't have to do what I and others do that helped me with this thing is go out and see live music all the time. So we basically put together a great cross-section of what's going on every year. It's always the weekend after Labor Day and in the Crossroads Arts District. And so we're up to 12 venues this year. And like you said, almost 60 bands and artists. We're doing a songwriter showcase. The Tasty Brew is hosting a showcase on it's this Saturday. Jeez, yeah. And it's going to be at Normal Human, where they will also be printing your T-shirts for the festival right there in front of you.
Normal Human is 1815 McGee.
Yes. And they also are the advanced ticket vendor. So if you want to get a ticket and don't want to pay the online convenience fees that I think are fairly, you know, like $250 or something like that, if you do it online, but you can skip that and go right to Normal Human and get yourself your tickets.
People can go to cmfkc.com to get advanced tickets and to get all the information you may need to know about.
That is correct. Yep.
That's a website devoted specifically to this conference, this festival.
Yeah, exactly. But it does have all the Mixed Master information or links to it. Silly Goose Records really is where all that information resides.
You've done a lot of all ages venues this year.
Yeah, definitely. We have, I want to say, 7 or 8 that are total, and about 5 of which during the festival. From after 6 o'clock, so you know, bring out your kids, and they got to stay with you if they're in a venue. But expose them to some great live music, and bring your kids to the conference if you want. You know, like just sort of if that's what your child's into. I mean, the conference is not just for, you know, already working musicians. It really is like geared toward that, you know, people who are already into their career and want to further it. But it's got a lot of good information for folks who are just getting started and want to connect with folks in the industry who care enough to come and do conferences like this that are helpful. And that really the music scene around here is very welcoming, very inviting. I've heard stories of people like, I went to L.A. for a couple of years and just stories of like, you played that venue. I'd like to talk to you about, you know, who the booking agent. Oh, no, make your own contacts. Huh? That's not my problem. You know, so that doesn't really happen here. It's just not that kind of town.
One of the bands that's sort of a headliner are the Fantastics.
Yes.
And they go on at midnight, Saturday night at Record Bar. Mm-hmm. There's a great lineup there. They go on after a band from Tulsa called Count Tutu, mm-hmm. which are amazing. And When the Record Bar closed its doors in its original home at 1020 Westport Road, I imagine you were very happy to see them reopen in the Crossroads, since that's where you started the festival.
Yes, I was very happy. I still am. It's a great venue. I mean, they've built a really, really cool place there that supports local artists, and they bring in national, international artists as well. Also, I happen to know that Saturday, September 9th, is their opening up for food again. So they used to have a restaurant at the other place, and they've had some kind of just getting started with it recently, but they're going to open their full menu all day for lunch and whatever.
I love it. You started this festival in 2005.
Correct.
This whole neighborhood, which some people could say is the east side of Maine, Crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's exploded in the time that you first started, hasn't it?
It really has. Yeah, definitely. There's a streetcar down there now, for Christ's sake. But even on the east side especially, that really in the last, 3 or 4 years.
Casey Crossroads at Grinders and all the different venues that have...
And Matt Abbott, Abbott Properties, I think, or East Crossroads is the name of his business. And he's been doing a ton of work putting in apartments and parking lots. And I think he is involved in the new Truman that's going to go down there. And they're actually one of the sponsors of the festival.
Very cool.
They want to support local music, and they're, a venue opening up.
Folks, can go to cmfkc.com to get advanced tickets. They're $20 for a festival pass.
That's right.
To get into all of these 12 different venues.
Yeah.
There are lots of free events, too, including the day parties.
Mm-hmm. And those are at Brewery Imperial and Josie Records during the day. So those will start at noon to 5:30. And the pop-up shops in Josie Roots parking lot will be 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
And you're doing kind of a showcase the night before.
Right. On Friday night, September 8th, that's just in a couple days, at Vinyl Renaissance on Overland Park. It's in Old OP there by the Peanut and I just can't think of the cross streets right now. So I want to say 79th and Santa Fe. It's all on the website, CMFKC. So Brad Cunningham is coming in, and he's going to do an hour set by himself, and then we'll do A.M. Merker and his friends from My Oh My. It won't be the full band, but it'll be a good cross-section of them. And then Instant Karma will close out that. And that's all 7 to 10. That's a free show. And Aubrey Vineyards is sponsoring that, and there are one of our beverage sponsors for the festival as well. So, they're supporting live music, and so can you. Just come out and watch the bands.
Busy guy. Friday, things get started at Vinyl Renaissance at
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, yep. Okay.
And we'll be doing some cake. Like, we'll give away a pair of tickets to the festival. We'll also do our last pre-sale pricing for the festival. We'll be there.
Saturday, September 9th, things start early at 9 a.m. with day parties. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned.
11.
11. What did I say?
Nine. Oh, we're getting mushy with it.
As things start early at 11 a.m. There's day parties. And then pop-up shops at Josie Records are from 11 to 7.
Right.
And then there's also a Midwest Music Foundation free musicians healthcare clinic at the Living Room Theater at 1818 McGee. That's from 11 to 5.
Right. And that is free. If you're a musician, just show up and say, hey, I'd like to get myself checked out. They have the Rock Docs, they're called, are from KU Med. And it's a group of musicians, of doctors who, care about the arts and care about the local music scene and want to make sure that, you don't become a doctor just to help musicians, right? they care about everybody, but these are pretty special doctors that are helping out the Midwest Music Foundation, who's doing great work all year long. And so this is sort of a natural partnership to try and offer free health care. And the clinic is geared towards the long term. It's not just like show up and look at you and then go away. It's, if there's something going on that becomes apparent, referrals and trying to get people connected with the resources right here in our community.
Crossroads Music Fest, the 13th annual.
Yep.
This Saturday, September 9th, nearly 60 bands on 12 stages, all within three blocks in Kansas City's Crossroads Arts and Music District. CMFKC.com can get you all the information you need to know. You can also get advance tickets and save yourself some money.
Yep.
It goes up a little bit day of show. Bill Sindel, thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. And check out the VIP option as well.
Are you going to be riding your bike from venue to venue?
I have I will. But I won't have to because we'll have a Barley Bus is going to be bringing one of their buses down, and we'll just be running a shuttle in a loop from 7 p.m. till midnight. And then, yeah, so if you don't want to walk three blocks, you hop on the shuttle, and it's going to be a fun night. I have to – I don't want to toot my own horn, but –
There's
a crowd of people that have helped with this thing. I mean, Jackie Craig and Rhonda Lyne, Mark Manning's hosting at the stage, and Ben Ose and Sarah Lynn Frank and Colin Blunt.
All kinds of good people.
Ham Scroggins and Diane Annis and Valerie Andrus, and the list goes on.
The KKFI family, but you're leading us down the road.
Oh, it's a good
Congratulations on the festival. I look forward to Saturday night. And you can go to cmfkc.com for more information about all of it. Stay tuned. Coming up at 1 o'clock is Jazz Afternoon with the Jazz Geek filling in for Jeff Harshbarger, and Jazz Geek will be part of the Crossroads Music Festival.
2:30 on Saturdays, playing at the Green Lady Lounge.
Lisa Henry.
Yeah.
So thank you, Bill. Thank you, Blair Schulman, and all your great guests from Charlotte Street Foundation, and Maria Vasquez Boyd. I hope you're having a good time in Sedona.
Not me. Now I do.
And I'm going to say her closing comment. Honey, I'm coming home. Although there's no one at my home right now. So I'm stay tuned for Jazz Afternoon with the Jazz Geek coming up at 1 o'clock. Thank you all for listening.